when I retired, I went into defense consulting, and I did everything from actually just sitting in cubicles, which I hated, and consulting, you know, with active duty guys, working with civilians, with the Department of State and U.S. AID that were going over to combat zones. I would work with them with everything from how to pick up a pistol off the ground and use it to defend yourself to how to survival techniques within working within an Afghan culture. So I started my own little company and took up a consulting gigs. I'm making a lot less money, but man, I've never been happier in my life. I do give talks on dyslexia and my experiences. Most of my talks, though, are either educationally related, the ins and outs of adult learning.
Did you have trouble in the service because of your dyslexia? Was it a significant challenge, or by then, you know, were things better?
Things were better because I had my own adaptations. My father, who was a physician, had basically in sometime in high school told me to stop hanging my hat on dyslexia, that I had outgrown it, and that it was nothing but a, you know, stop using it as a crutch and as an excuse, and get about the business of life. When I got into the Army is very structured. And so that made my scheduling, you know, my activities a lot better because I had a certain place at a certain time where I had to be in a certain uniform. And then once I got through that structure, I liked the lack of structure in special operations. I kind of migrated over to that. And then the lack of adult supervision, if you will. And that's how we, in special operations, do great things and get in a lot of trouble at the same time.
I know that we just added someone to our board. I wonder if this is one of your strengths with special ops, but hers is like situational awareness.
Yeah, I think that's part of the gift, if you will. I developed it because I would have a great deal more success if I gave oral presentations as a kid. Mm-hmm. And I very quickly learned how to read a room, I could tell in the room whether I was boring people or they were enjoying it. And that translated very easily over to my interest in anthropology and then in special operations and special forces in particular. It's about working with indigenous people and understanding when you're talking to them, whether you're making them angry, happy, sad, whatever, and how to either at times mirror their body language or go off and somebody's getting very angry, you don't want to raise to their level. You want to take it down a couple of notches, and then next thing you know, that person is calmed down and working with you. My wife, Katie, says that I'm almost like Sherlock Holmes. I see all these things in the room and I quickly connect the dots and I can say, okay, watch out, that guy over there is angry, stay away from him. And I almost make a hobby out of it when I'm waiting for flights in the airport, looking at people and figuring out what their story is and, you know, if this person's agitated or excited or bored by the travel or what's going on. Probably the A number one thing is for me is tuition. Being able to be in a room with a group of folks that are brainstorming a problem, and I can listen to it, and I will go right to the solution. Say this is what we need to do. I go right to A to F, and then I've learned that I have to because people look at you and like there's no way that could be the answer, and so then I have to go back and I have to walk the dog down the logic trail, which is hard for me to do sometimes because just intuitively I connect the dots, and I think a lot of things with folks is they look for differences in information bites, if you will. And I tend to seek out the commonalities and then make the connections between those commonalities, and it gives me a kind of a weird type of intuition. And then that lends itself into problem solving. I'm a very good problem solver, and it's one of the reasons I'm a consultant. I can sit down, I can listen to a person's issues with their company or whatever, and many, many times after I hear them talk for a while, the problem that they're having just comes right to the surface, and then I have to figure out a way to explain why that's the dynamics between that issue. So communicating on paper, verbally, and non-verbally are all strengths that I have, and I'm able to team build. If you put all my friends in, together in a room, there'd be a huge brawl because my friends are so different and so eclectic, and I love them all because of all their perspectives. And so I build teams with disparate personalities. And as a result, over the years, I figured out that those are the three keys to being a leader, being a team builder, a problem solver, and a communicator.
Did you ever tell anyone that you're dyslexic?
No. Well, but first of all, you have to understand that the my particular personality, I'm a people person, but also you just kind of get thick-skinned over the years. So when I went to graduate school to get my master's in education, I had a special ed course, and I thought, well, this is going to be interesting because, you know, I had dyslexia at one point. And the special ed teacher, you know, first thing she said, well, you know, and I was in with a group of teachers, and the first thing she said was, well, we all know LD means lazy and dumb. And I kind of chuckled with everybody else, but I thought, you know, God, that's, you know, that was a punch below the belt, because that was my call sign as a kid. I was the lazy and dumb one. And then she said, learning disabilities like dyslexia are for life. You don't grow out of them. And I thought, oh my God, it just was like an epiphany. And so from then on, I would tell anybody who cared to hear it that I was dyslexic. I would, and a lot of times I would make a mistake. I'd mispronounce something, and they'll say, "Well, that's having a dyslexic moment." And they'd laugh, and I'd say, "No, I really am a card-carrying dyslexic." It was I was teaching at the Command and General Staff College in the Special Operations Department, and I was there with five other active duty Green Berets, all of us too old and too long in the tooth to be able to do anything operationally. As part of my requirement for that graduate school class, I wrote an article and published it in Independent School Magazine. But I shared it, and one of the guys who was with me said, oh yeah, I was dyslexic. And I started going around the room and figured out that every one of us was dyslexic or ADD. That is a question that's never been answered, but I'd be willing to bet the rest of my IRA that the preponderance of the Army Special Forces, not SEALs, not Rangers, those guys are a little bit different in what they do, but the Green Beret, the guys that go out and teach and work with indigenous people and work in small teams by themselves away from the flagpole for months, those guys, I think there's a high prevalence of dyslexia in there, really do.
You know, what's like the big picture view of what you did as a Green Beret?
We are the only Department of Defense entity that is specifically selected, trained, organized, and equipped to conduct unconventional warfare. And unconventional warfare basically is taking a small team of individuals and infiltrating them into a troubled area. And they link up with the resistance movement, and then they organize resistance movement, put them in uniform, get them paid, get them ID cards, and make them a legitimate outfit, and then train and fight with them against an oppressive force. So when we went in Afghanistan, we had small teams of Special Forces and CIA guys linked up with the Northern Alliance and rode with them on horseback to fight against the Mujahideen and the Taliban, but having the radios and the ability to reach back and call in airstrikes and so forth.
So one of your strengths must have been kind of like boots on the ground, resourcefulness?
You absolutely do. And you have a 12-man A team.
And what was your,
I was the A team leader. I was a captain in charge. My particular team was a mountain operations team. So we did operations at in mountains. So we did a lot of technical climbing and so forth. And I'm a fairly large guy. I'm like 5'11" and 230. So me scaling cliffs wasn't a pretty picture. But I'm living proof you can do it.
That's great. And so it seems to me too, as a captain. So that's what you said: the teamwork and the fact that you could get into the minds of all your men as well as the people they're going to deal with. Is that right? So you must be good at psychology as well as alternate scenarios. Is that right?
You had to be extremely good because the guys, I always tell people that the hardest leadership was that as an A-team commander, because each one of these guys was trained in destabilizing legitimate authority and legitimate governments. And so if you didn't keep these guys active, they would turn inside their own team authority. And there was a few times where with some of these strong personalities, we'd have a moment. But having said that, these guys are still my best friends in the world. We're all Facebook buddies, and we're all gray-haired and bent over. But some of the greatest experiences I had was working with these small groups of guys in austere conditions. And above all, you had to have a sense of humor. As you were standing in the rain, 40 degrees in South Korea on a rice paddy, freezing to death, you had to have a sense of humor. You couldn't have guys on the team that would get down about things.